What's the worst thing that an Amazon seller can do with a loan?
Pay themselves. Debt is good if it's used the right way. If it's used the wrong way or for something that's not going to outweigh what the cost of the debt is, then that's a reason not to take it.
You taught me about something that I didn't know about, which was VAT loans. And I didn't know that you could get other people to pay your VAT. Can you just explain what that is and how it works?
It's a short-term loan that spreads the cost of your VAT bill. The lender will pay your VAT bill for you and then you will pay over 3 months.
How do you survive Amazon? Welcome to Surviving Amazon, the podcast that exposes the brutal truth behind selling on Amazon, where only the strongest survive. We bring you insider stories and strategies from experts and sellers who have been through it all, the ups, the downs, and the moments that made them question if it was even all worth it. I'm Johnny Bradley, and today we're joined by Amy Litchfield, who has helped sellers battle through their way of selling on Amazon with providing the best, most relevant funding solutions. She's helped raise tens of millions for companies over the past 5 years. Whether you're starting as a seller or you've been established for years, money and especially the cost of finance is something that you really need to understand, and Amy's the expert that you need in your corner. So she's helped sellers live it, survive it, and is here to share exactly how they do it. So Amy, my first question is, how do you survive Amazon?
Well, I think you kind of covered it in the fact that you don't want to run out of money. They do say money makes the world go round, and it is true. Cash flow is the king in any business. And if you were to run out of money, run out of stock, we all know that it just goes a little bit downhill from there and you have to rebuild. So the biggest thing, I think, from my point of view, for any Amazon seller or any business in general, is to keep the cash flowing. And that's the critical point.
But that's, I guess, quite hard sometimes. Like, there might be a difference between like a physical inventory business and, say, a service-based business, right? Do you find that with physical inventory businesses, are they more adverse to finance or funding solutions? Or is it something that if they don't have it, it's like you can't actually survive?
I think that you can survive without finance. However, it's a slower burn. So it might take you a lot longer to get to where your business wants to go. So I think that's a key point, is that you can survive without it. But there's key things to do along the way to help with that, such as trying not to pay yourself as soon as possible. If you can reinvest everything back into the business initially, then that does help, especially for sort of startup Amazon businesses.
That's quite true. Sorry to interrupt you. but we see that quite a lot, right? Because we obviously help people start from scratch. We help existing sellers. The people that say, hey, I didn't take a penny from it for 2 years, they're the ones that are able to grow a lot bigger. If someone is taking money, right, does, from a finance perspective or using financial products, is that looked down upon, but where they think, hey, look, you should just use this money instead?
Not necessarily. I think the problem is there's a massive gap between finance options for a startup business, so sort of in the very early infancy, and between the businesses that are more established. So sort of those startup businesses, and until you get to about, I don't know, £5,000 to £10,000 per month in revenue, there's a massive gap in options. So until you get to that point, I think it is really important to decide whether you actually need to take money from the business, because it's going to go a lot further for both the director and the business if they can just reinvest it back into there and just try and hold off. But from a lender's point of view, as long as the business can show that you can afford to take money from the business and still, you know, reinvest, so you're not just taking every single penny, every single bit of profit from the business, then there's no objection, really, I would say.
Okay, nice. And in terms of for those sellers that, let's say they're doing like 20 to 50,000 in revenue per month, right? What sort of funding solutions are they really going to have access to? Because the problem with that sort of business is that, especially if you're growing, you have your costs for ordering stock. You have to order, obviously, if you're ordering from China, many months in advance. You might not have the best payment terms at that point, or you may be looking to scale into new products or to new marketplaces. For someone that's, they're an established business, they've already done well, they've got something that they've actually worked on and is working, what's their options available to them?
So there's actually quite a few options when you get to that sort of level of business, and just in general, when there's specific Amazon options as well, or just online businesses. So you've got things like just term loans, which might be good if you're, I don't know, if you're having your own storage unit, if you're not just using sort of Amazon FBA. It could be, so they're good. So they're anywhere from sort of 12 months to 5 years, you can get term loans. So again, that all comes down to affordability. So can you show that you can afford to repay that loan?
So is that maybe for like larger projects, so that, hey, we're launching into a new country where we don't know exactly how this is going to go, but if the worst case scenario is we could pay this money back from our existing, like our existing profit, our existing sales.
Yeah, exactly. So it's if you're going to, if it's a larger chunk, not for things like stocks, you probably wouldn't use that for, because you want to use something that sort of goes in line with your stock cycle. So yeah, exactly that. Just those bigger chunks of money that you need for whatever your growth plan is, really.
You say that there's, you know, basically there's better facilities for stock. What does that look like?
So they're kind of, there's a huge array of different options out there. So for example, there's lenders who will offer up to 120-day payment terms. So let's say you've got, I don't know, a shipment coming in from China and you need to do a bulk order. You can use that facility. So it's pre-approved. So you would use that facility to pay the supplier. And then you either have the option to repay in up to 120 days and only get charged for what you're using. So if you, I don't know, if you repay in day 90, for example, you only get charged for those 90 days. Or there's options where you can pay the supplier and then choose to repay that over 3, 6, 9, or 12 months. So there's a couple of different options like that. They're all kind of, they all have their own nuances, but that's just a handful of examples of facilities that are available.
So you could have, so let's say my payment terms with my supplier are pretty basic. They're not great. I pay 30% deposit, 70% on completion, but I'm not getting paid from Amazon until, for, you know, for this stock for a fair bit of time, or my disbursement from Amazon, I've not got the money yet, right, to pay for this stock. And I need the stock to be able to stay in stock. And like, we know that going out of stock is a really, really, really big problem with Amazon. So if I'm saying, hey, look, I need to borrow 20 grand, whatever it is, 50 grand, whatever the cost is, 5 grand, is it then where they come to you and say, hey, look, what's the cost of this finance if I did need it for 60 days versus what am I missing out on if I was out of stock? Is that basically the value proposition there of the interest payment versus what am I going to miss out on?
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant point, because if you're taking debt finance, what you're doing with that finance needs to outweigh what the cost is. And if it doesn't, it doesn't make sense. Don't take it. So it's really understanding what that is going to result in if you were to use that. And also understanding the cost, because I work with all different types of clients in terms of businesses, but especially things like revenue-based loans, like cash advances, you've a little bit like what Amazon offers through their portal with YouLend. It's actually understanding the cost of what you're borrowing, and there's a lot of numbers flown around, so it can throw people off with actually what the cost is. And that's, if you don't know the cost, it's really hard to evaluate whether it's worth actually taking that. Completely valid point in terms of, yeah, understanding what is going to happen if I was to take this.
So you basically, yeah, you need some number crunching. Yeah. So if I'm going to be out of stock for 2 weeks because I can't afford to order my stock in time, one, how much profit am I missing out on? Like typically, like if I'm selling X number of units per day, how much money am I making from that? That's obviously the opportunity cost there. But also, if I'm going out of stock, this is maybe a little bit more less tangible because it's, I mean, you don't exactly know like how that's going to affect our ranking on Amazon. Will we have to then spend more money on ads to get our ranking back when we get back in stock? And typically the answer would be yes. And if I'm spending 10% extra, just 10% extra on my ads, or maybe even more, right, to sell through more stock to like relaunch my product, well, I'm paying for it somewhere, right? I'm either paying in marketing costs, or if I don't go out of stock, I'm paying for the interest. So it's basically trying to work out which is more expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think the other thing to look at is, you know, if let's say you're out of stock for 2 months, let's just use that as an example, because you're waiting for money to come in to then reorder, all that type of thing. Is that the cost of the finance that you're taking on, if you were to get back in stock so you don't run out of stock, you might be able to make, I don't know, let's just use a figure of £10,000 profit in that 2 months, just to a random figure. If you're out of stock and then you're having to sort of do all of that marketing again, you've still got 2 months that you haven't been making any profit. So you've also got that cost plus then the increasing your marketing spend and all of that type of cost as well. So it does all add up. So it's just really understanding, if you are thinking of taking finance for things like stock and even marketing, is understanding what the cost of that is, what it looks like, even how that is going to affect your cash flow, because, you know, you've got to pay it back somehow. So just understanding all of those factors, because every lender is different. I think that's the other thing. If you're a bit unsure about finance, you might not know what questions to ask. And it's just really important to be really curious about the type of finance that you're taking.
Because I think it's quite like when I first started in business, first of all, a lot of business terminology was very confusing, but particularly finance, maybe for quite a long time in terms of, you know, debt's bad, right? This is what society teaches us. Debt is not good. And obviously from, you know, you do like housing developments, like property development, obviously you're in the finance sector, and you would probably say that it's not bad, right? Or maybe there's nuances to it. There's quite a big learning curve that you have to get over to just have this trust that, hey, this is, you know, okay. And what do you think the best way for people to do that is? So let's say they've been operating, you know, a couple years, and they've been basically up against it with cash flow, and they've got, I don't want to borrow, right? What's the first thing that they can do to maybe just put their mind at ease?
Well, I think when someone doesn't want to borrow, it is a case of maybe the understanding. So it's making sure that everything that the unknowns are answered, which is really difficult because you don't always know the unknowns. But I think what I spend a lot of time with clients sort of going through literally the minute details and helping them understand what's going to happen. The property stuff is a perfect example. So I'm obviously on the finance side. My partner is a carpenter. He doesn't deal with the finance numbers, so he finds it really scary. Whereas when you have a full understanding and actually speaking to someone about it, so we get a lot of clients who have looked sort of on Google for finance because they feel like they need it, but they're a bit unsure. But actually being able to speak to someone who's not on the lender's side either, obviously lenders are, I guess, in some way biased because they're talking about one product. Being able to talk to someone like myself, or if there's another broker that someone knows, is just talking through worries, concerns, because then we can help alleviate some of that and explain things in a really simple way and help do those number crunching that we spoke about.
Yeah, absolutely. So like knowledge is power, basically, in this realm, because it is confusing when you're talking about APRs and interest rate and payment terms and overdraft facilities. This is all like super confusing stuff for a lot of people. What's the worst thing that an Amazon seller can do with a loan?
Pay themselves. Yeah, and I have seen it before where people are taking money just to pay themselves, and it's we just spoke about what's good debt, what's bad debt, or is debt good? And in my opinion, debt is good if it's used the right way. Mm-hmm. If it's used the wrong way or for something that's not going to outweigh what the cost of the debt is, then that's a reason not to take it. So I would say, yeah, paying yourself would go top of my list. I think also for maybe newer Amazon sellers who maybe haven't tried marketing for certain products, it may be slightly more risky if you were to just dive in and, you know, spend a load of money that you're paying for to try a new marketing strategy for a new product or something like that. Using existing profits for that to trial it and then have the results from that and then use the finance to improve that would be a better way to do it, I would say.
Yeah, okay. So don't basically put all of your risk, which is finance money, like into one basket where when you don't know what the output's going to be. Give it a test, even if it's a small test. And the way that we can look at that with like selling on Amazon is ordering a couple hundred units of a product and just testing it. They're testing the marketing, testing the ads, see if you can make it work. Because if you can make it work, hey, then if you need more money, at least you validated like the proof of concept, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You taught me about something that I didn't know about, which was VAT loans. And I didn't know that you could get other people to pay your VAT. And this is very important for Amazon sellers and people in the UK, because we've got a lot of money to pay in tax. Can you just explain like what that is and how it works?
Yeah, sure. So really simply, it's a short-term loan that spreads the cost of your VAT bill. So let's say if you're quarterly VAT, let's say it's £10,000, just a round figure. The lender will pay your VAT bill for you, and then you would pay over 3 months, and then you can keep doing it. So then it means that instead of, I think I have a really good diagram actually of how a VAT loan works and how it can be used and why basically you would do it. You might have the money in the bank to pay your VAT bill, but actually if you were to invest that into more stock, the profit is higher than what the cost of the VAT loan would be. It's for businesses who either maybe don't want to use all of their capital at bank to pay their VAT bill, or if you've got bigger things to invest it in, and then you can spread the cost in line with your cash flow. So effectively, you're just rolling in your VAT. So my number one rule would be don't pay HMRC last. Always pay them first. They do offer payment plans, but as soon as you start taking payment plans, your options are then limited for the future, and you're always on the back foot with them. It just becomes a little bit of a nightmare, and HMRC have so much power over businesses in the UK that they can put a winding up order to close your business down.
Okay, so yeah, well, you definitely don't want to get on their bad side.
No.
So is it in essence you're saying, hey, look, January, February, March, right? Mm-hmm. Normally we might save our money from our revenue, and actually, you know, we might not even get some of that until April and even May. So you're saying rather than save that money, then you could use that money essentially to build your business rather than keeping it in the bank doing nothing. And then you have VAT loan that pays your VAT. And then essentially, as long as you can calculate that you're paying it back in the next 3 months, then you've basically just displaced, rather than saving for it, it's more you're paying for it. Well, what's the best way to explain that? Because you still have to have the money, right?
Yeah, so I would always say keep the money, because you've still got to obviously get approved for a VAT loan. But save the money like you usually would do. And then when it comes to the time where you do need to pay your VAT, you can have a look at the VAT loan options, and then you can weigh up whether it's worth, if you were to put the money that you've put aside into stock, marketing, whatever that looks like, whatever's best for your business at that moment in time, look at what the cost of that will be in terms of the, you know, the profit that you make on that compared to the cost of the VAT loan.
Nice. Okay. Are there any other like cool little financial products that most people like that just wouldn't know about? Because people normally think, I'll get a loan for 12 months. Like that's the typical, you know, what people think about loans.
Yeah, so I've kind of mentioned them already, but the 120-day payment terms are quite good, especially if you're a product-based businesses and also and buying from overseas as well. Your cycle can take quite a long time. So that's quite cool. It just means that you can, you know, pay people without having to fork out a load of money if you don't have it. So that really helps with cash flow. Same with corporation tax. There's corporation tax loans as well, but they're typically over, you know, 12 months. Yeah.
There's a loan for everything, it seems.
There literally is. I did actually come across, I don't know if it's a new product, but there's a lender in the market that next day payouts for Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Held. I don't know if you're familiar with that concept.
Well, this is the thing. So Amazon, you know, they pay out typically every 14 days. You can request it earlier. But yeah, there's services out there where they pay you every day based upon your sales, and they can plug into your Amazon account. And obviously they just get paid as in when you get that money back from Amazon. And obviously for waiting 14 days, and it's not just waiting 14 days, there's already been a time period before that where you've still had to wait because of customer returns and all that sort of stuff. So that money's been held up for quite a long period of time. And then it's like you get it every 14 days. And if you need to pay a supplier, then obviously you can request the money early. But if you want to pay a supplier, sometimes like you need the money a lot earlier. And those things do really make a difference. That 1 week you get into the right production slot, you get the right, you know, you get the right boat or the right the right plane that hit the UK or US on time. Like there's so many variables that can delay you 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Like these single days on this end can make a massive difference on that end. And you mentioned like the Amazon loans and things like that. So I got a notification on my phone yesterday, said, hey, we've approved you for like these two loans or whatever. Like, should sellers use those or should they look at other alternatives? What's best basically?
Yeah, so I would actually say they're absolutely fine to use, but it all comes down to, again, knowing what you're borrowing. So they're really competitive through Amazon, even things like Shopify. They do their own sort of capital facilities and cash advances, and they are really competitive. But it's, again, yeah, as I say, understanding what it is you're borrowing, because there might be other options. So, for example, I was speaking to a client the other day who was looking at a cash advance. They'd received an offer which was, I can't remember exactly how much it was off the top of my head, but the percentage split of what you're paying, so every £100 you pay, you're paying, let's say 10% back to repay that loan. They were getting confused with the figures, so they were getting confused with the split rate and actually what the total cost of finance was. But the quote that they'd already got was about 6% more expensive, but it was a lower split. It means that their cash flow would have been better because they're taking less of a percentage from each sale to repay the loan. But I was explaining to them what each of the points mean, and although the total cost of finance was more expensive, they opted for the lower percentage in from each sale because it was better for their cash flow. So I found with some of the Amazon offerings, they can take a higher percentage, so it means that your cash flow is actually, you're basically paying it back quicker, which affects your cash flow. So it's looking at what is your priority and what else can you get. I think there's no harm in looking at other options because, again, as I say, you only know what you know.
Right, okay. So you can take that if you get a notification saying, hey, we're going to give you, we will lend you this much money, look at those terms and then say, okay, cool, these are the terms on that. What other alternatives do I have? Which, and this is where it gets into like the details of it, of saying, well, actually, do we want to pay back X pounds per product sold, or would we want to pay a little bit less but happy to pay over a longer period of time because we're in our business, we are focused on X, Y, and Z. And I think that's where there comes a lot of confusion, because it is, I think, quite confusing. You need someone to explain it to you properly. But also is, well, what's best for our business? And sometimes if you don't know, like you said, what is available, you don't know if something is going to be, if there's a better option available to you. So I would certainly recommend people, because like at least talk to people like yourself. Because otherwise, if I was to do this, like I'm pretty good with finance, I understand it. But if you were to say, hey, look, here's the three options in front of you, work out all the different nuances to all of them and which is going to be the best one, then it would take me quite a fair amount of time, because I'd probably get confused and have to do a spreadsheet and then be like, okay, well, this calculation is not quite right. Am I even trusting myself that this is correct, right? that's probably where people can get into like financial sticky situations. And this kind of leads on to my next question is, do you find that if people don't have the right information or knowledge up front, they can make issues with repayments where they actually put their foot in it?
Completely. And we see it far too many times where we're kind of called for help. We even get existing clients who we've arranged finance for before, and they've then gone out, tried to get themselves, and then come back to us and said, oh, I'm in a bit of a pickle, can you have a look at this, because they've taken something that they didn't truly understand, or there was something that they hadn't asked, so they didn't know that was a nuance of that particular product. So I think a review of options doesn't do any harm. I mean, if you work with someone like me, so I'm from Choice Business Loans, we don't charge any fees upfront, so everything is on success. So there is no obligation. Yeah, there's no cost upfront. Everything is on success. Okay. So there's no harm or obligation to talk to someone like myself.
Perfect. And how long would you say people need to have those conversations so that if they do go ahead with it, they have enough time to get everything together? And what would they need to then get the money when they need it? Like, what's the timeline from start to finish? If someone was in a hurry, like, how soon do they need to do it?
So if someone's in a hurry, there are options that you can literally do within 24 hours.
Right.
The quicker, usually the more expensive. So I'd always say, you know, give at least a week, more if possible, because then it opens up more options when you have a little bit more time. I'm a huge advocate of cash flow forecasting, which is quite difficult to do in a product-based business because you don't know when you're going to make sales necessarily, but it's using existing data to help with that. But if you can spot cash pinches in advance, it can save a lot of money, it can save a lot of stress and hassle.
Nice. So if say, for example, we're looking at, you know, Q4, typically we need more stock for Q4 than most of other times of the year, right? You might sell 3, 4, 5 times the amount of stock in that quarter. And we know that paying for that is going to happen maybe a couple months beforehand, maybe even longer, depending on your payment terms. So middle of the year, particularly if, hey, you've got a giftable product and you're not making as much between January and July, then you might go, right, come July when I need to start putting my orders in, hey, I'm not going to have enough money for this. Or this is going to really put us in a challenging position. Or, hey, this means that we won't be able to launch that product that we wanted to launch at Christmas because we're just not going to have the money for it. Is that kind of what you mean by that?
Yes, definitely. And just in general as well, I mean, in terms of if you feel like, well, I'm going to go out of stock roughly around this time, am I going to have enough cash at bank to actually restock? And when do I need to do that? But yeah, in your example for the sort of the festive period, and obviously you've got Black Friday coming up, if you miss the boat, literally, you're going to suffer, because you know you might order it in and then you've got all this stock that you're sitting on because you haven't managed to get it in time. And that's a really effective way to use finance for those reasons, because it's going to pay dividends if you can get it in time.
Exactly. And are there services that, and well, what would be the service? Because it wouldn't be like 120 day payback period for something like that, because hey, we're going to make our money over Christmas. Is that one of the more longer term loans that you spoke about at the beginning?
Potentially. So a lot of those loans, and this is again one of the questions to ask any lender, is early repayment charges. So that's the key question, because there are lenders who may say they don't have any early repayment charges in terms of fees, but you have to pay the entire interest for the term. But if you were to say get that 5-year loan and you didn't have any early repayment charges, and if you repaid early, you save on interest, then that's a quite effective way to do it, because by spreading it over a 5-year term, your monthly repayments will be lower than if you were, for example, did I just cut out then?
Yeah. Can you say that? You said if there's any early repayment charges, then it cut off.
If there are any early repayment charges, it means that if you're spreading over that 5-year loan, your monthly repayments are lower than, say, a 12-month loan.
Yeah.
And it means you can then repay it early and save on interest. And then if you need to do it again next year.
So that's really important, because if you're paying it a 5-year loan back after 12 months, but you're paying the interest of 5 years, then that's a big, big, big problem.
Yeah. And I've seen that happen many times.
Really? Okay. We don't want to do that.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And there's other potential solutions depending on how much you need, but there's things like overdraft alternatives or revolving credit facilities, as they're also known, which typically have those for a 12-month period. And assuming everything's been okay with it, you can sort of roll it on to the next year. But it works exactly like an overdraft. So you dip in and out of it, and then you only pay interest each month for what you've used. So that's a really effective way to, again, use finance, because you're not being charged for what you're not using.
Right, okay. So if we think, hey, we may need a bit extra money here, like we might need it for a week or 2 weeks. We don't know it exactly because of our sales, and maybe they're going to be a lot better than we thought or a lot worse. I'm going to have that facility, and if I use it, I pay. If I don't use it, I'm not paying.
Exactly that, yeah. So there are setup fees involved with that, which is about, off the top of my head, about 4%. So that's a cost to account for. If you definitely don't think you're going to use it, then obviously think about that. But over the 12 months, what are you going to use it, and is it going to be worth?
Nice, okay. So really, you can get quite advanced with this stuff, so that at any particular time of year, depending on the reason why you need finance, you're dipping into different financial products. You're using different ones that are best for that exact circumstances. It's not just a case of, hey, we need a loan and it's going to be 12 months and then we might only, you know, we might pay it back in month three. It's, we're going to use this revolving facility and then we might use 120-day stuff for some of our stock. And maybe, yeah, we do want a bigger loan for a different thing. Maybe not all the finance in one go, but having, yeah. I think the thing that I'm getting from this is making sure that it's really specialized, that it's not just one size fits all. It's depending on what you actually need it for, when you're going to need it, how much you're going to need, what's the cost of that, getting something that's super relevant for you and your business at that stage, right?
Yeah, exactly that. And just going back to the seller central options on Amazon, I guess that's one of the pitfalls with plugging in, as in just using those products, because you're not, they're not consulting you and saying what you're actually looking to do, and then they're not having those conversations, which I think are really important at the same time.
What about then, because this is another big concern, because dealing with Amazon, and this is, you know, surviving Amazon, this is literally like sometimes we're just clinging on, right? They can shut you down at basically any time for something that's completely outside of your control. And one of my friends, he had, you know, 70, 80% of his products taken off of Amazon for a stupid reason that was absolutely nothing to do with the product, right? They said it had drugs in it and it was like a game controller. And you know, their revenue basically dried up overnight because that was, you know, 90-95% of their revenue. So we always have this concern of like, well, what if Amazon do this and how are we going to pay that back? Do some of these loans, are, if they're particularly used for stock, is there an agreement where essentially that's the collateral?
Yeah, so I mean, there used to be a funder that would take security over stock. But things like cash advances, most of them don't actually have personal guarantees either, which I find, which is really interesting, because most unsecured loans have personal guarantee attached, which I'll go into more detail another time. But yeah, there are some that will take security over stock, although I think there was one lender that did do that, and I'm not sure if they're actually around at the moment.
Right.
So, but we find this,
yeah,
in
it. Maybe it didn't work, yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe not. But I think because they're relying off of data, historic data, and that's really what they're relying on, because things like the cash advances plug into your Amazon system, all that type of stuff. They are relying. And actually, I think it's quite good because they're not taking personal guarantees. So actually, they are relying on the income. But obviously, as you say, if the income stops overnight, what happens? They don't get paid.
But I guess that comes down to any loan that's for your business, is if they'll then come for, you know, collecting your debt in other ways, I guess, if like any finance company would. Now, I do want to talk about that personal guarantee for a second, because when you're starting up, you know, if you want a 5K loan or a 10K loan or whatever, or like the government backed loan scheme, maybe I've got the wrong terminology there, but whatever that, maybe you can correct me. It's a personal guarantee. So if shit hits the fan, like I have to figure out a way to pay for it. You know, it's judged on my affordability. And if I don't pay it back, then like someone's going to come around my house, right?
Pretty much, yeah. So much like that. There's a massive process before that. So have time, Johnny, don't worry. So with the start, so the startup loan is the government scheme that you mentioned there. So that's for businesses that have been trading for less than 3 years. That's a really good way for sort of new businesses to get started, or even businesses that are a bit more established but still under 3 years. It's a loan of 6% per annum over 5 years, probably the cheapest loan you can get at the moment anywhere.
And then, but there's a few issues with that, and I think I know this, but I do want you to correct me, because I think this is really interesting to know, because everyone I've spoken to this about, no one knows about it. So is it you can get up to £25,000 per director if they're an equal shareholder and they've never had this before in a previous business or existing business? Is that right?
Yeah. So up, the key word is up to up 25,000. They are being a little, I think because there's a lot of people applying for startup loans now, they are being a little bit more cautious about lending the full 25,000. I think my understanding is that they have to average out at about £15,000 per application. So if they're giving out loads of 25,000, there's people that aren't going to get that much because they have to bring down the average. What I've also seen them do recently is do it in tranches. So they might give, I don't know, £10,000 now, and then in 3 months' time, they'll give an additional 10,000, for example. So sort of tranche actually works quite well from a cash flow perspective for a new business. So, but yes, that is correct.
For startups, and that first 3 years is so critical, because that first year, you know, you're launching products. Second year, if it's doing well, your biggest problem is like, you know, cash flow. So if I'm in my second year and I'm thinking, right, cool, like we just need a bit extra money, we're going to launch a few more products, we're confident in what we're doing, we can actually go to this government loan scheme and see if we're viable for it. If the business, this is the question here though, if the business is, you know, successful at this point and, you know, it can afford the finance and, you know, the books look good, is there an argument to say maybe don't do that because it's personally guaranteed, and at this point look towards something that is, you know, tied to your business rather than you as a person?
I think it's all down to the appetite of the borrower. Some businesses who are nearing that 3 year mark, that I'll always say to anyone who's under 3 years trading about the startup loan. But let's say they are sort of nearing towards that 3 years and actually they're thinking, well, the cost is more important to me than actually the personal guarantee aspect. So they'll go with the startup loan. Others are a little bit more like, well, because it's in your name, they might be looking for a mortgage in the next year. That affects affordability in that way, because it's a personal loan. It's not in the name of a limited company. So it's really down to the borrower's appetite and what their plans are. So I'll always say about, you know, if you're looking for if you're going to be remortgaging or anything like that, you need to speak to a mortgage advisor to make sure that if you were to take this loan, that you would still be within the affordability of what you're looking to do.
Right. Okay. So just like if you were getting a car finance or anything like that, and you know, hey, look, we're buying a house in the next year, that's something definitely, you know, always to consider. And it's pretty normal to consider that. So it's a personal loan. And then essentially what's happening is that you personally are loaning the company the money, essentially, which is like a director loan, so that the company still is paying back that loan to you. You're paying it back to, you know, the government, right?
Yeah. That's exactly how it works.
Perfect. Okay. So the one of the last questions I've got is, what's something that you wish all brand owners knew about finance? And we might've discussed it already, that if they knew, their businesses just would be a lot more pleasurable to run.
I think just how many options there are available, because I think people do just assume that there's maybe only one or two, especially if they are able to get them through Amazon. They might be a little bit sort of blindsided into what's actually out there. And it does take a heck of a lot of research to try and figure it all out yourself. So I think that's the key thing, is just that exploratory mindset of what else is there. So it's a bit of a minefield out there, but, I love it.
Good. So basically, there's no issue with just having the conversation. Like, no one's going to force you into finance. There's no pressure selling in finance. I'm pretty sure that's not allowed. Maybe you can tell me with that. Pretty sure it's not. And I think having that conversation, at least with a broker like yourselves, rather than, you know, if I go straight to Santander, then they're going to say, hey, look, this is the best product that we've got. This is amazing. It's great. It's the best thing you're going to find. When we know that that's, you know, probably not the case. Going to someone that is a bit more independent and having the conversation without any risk of anything happening, it's just a conversation. And at least you're armed with the right information, so that, like, if I wanted to start up another business tomorrow and I think, do you know what? Actually, I would like to use the government-backed loan scheme. And I think that, no, why not? I want to use someone else's money, essentially, at the start. At least I have the awareness that it exists. Like, I didn't know that existed. Maybe, I don't know. I can't remember the first time we spoke, but I don't know, this time last year or a couple of years ago. You know, some of these things I just didn't know existed. So having awareness of it just means that if you need it in the future, you don't have to, but at least you know that it bloody exists, and you're not just using Amazon's loan schemes or Amazon's partners, which may not be the best thing for you. So look, I really appreciate that. If people want to reach out and just have a conversation with you about the options for them, what is the best way to do that?
So I'm on LinkedIn. So I'm quite active. Quite active on there, probably not active enough these days, but I'm on there, or phone or email. Should I share my phone number? Or
and then we'll put it underneath the video where relevant, but yeah, obviously for people listening, then they can take a note of it.
Yeah, so our you can just reach us on our office line. We're a nice small team based in Buckinghamshire in England. So our number is 01494 410125. Give me a call if you need anything. You can go on our website as well and find our email address, or connect with me on LinkedIn.
Cool. And what's the website?
It is www.choicebusinessloans.co.uk.
Amazing. And you're just round the corner from me, which is perfect as well.
Exactly.
So thank you again, Amy, for helping us survive Amazon. Now, if you like this episode and you found it helpful, please do share it with other sellers, particularly if they're struggling with their finances. Maybe it's a personal question. Subscribe, comment if you're watching on things like YouTube, so that we can help other sellers survive on Amazon. Thank you again, Amy, and we'll see you all very soon. Bye-bye.